If you're new to classical music and would like to know more about it, it's time for 25 more essential classical pieces you should know. Hello and welcome to the Musician Toolkit, episode number 68. My name is David Lane, and it is great to be with you once again. I hope all of you are doing well today. If this is your first time checking out the podcast, welcome. And as always, if you've been with us for a while and have heard a variety of the topics we've discussed here, welcome back. I appreciate all of you listeners, whether or not this is the first time that you've listened or the 68th episode that you have checked out. Okay, I know that the number 68 is a long way from 100, but I am looking ahead to 32 weeks from now when we get to episode 100. And I feel like by the time we get there, there's going to be some revisions to this podcast. So I'm going to be looking at everything and kind of figuring out what I really like, what works about it, and what I think needs to be changed. And I don't want to make that decision in a vacuum. I want to get direct feedback from you, the listener. So at the beginning of a lot of episodes, for probably the next several episodes, I'm going to ask for you to do something that is important so that I make the best decision possible. And that something is this. If you listen to this episode and you feel either like, I want more content like this, or I would prefer less content like this. Whatever your opinion is, please let me know. I'm full aware that this podcast goes all over the map when it comes to music. We talk about listening to music, and I have another episode similar to this planned in the very near future that's for a different genre. I talk about music theory, talk about music history, talk about practicing, talk about sight reading. Well, I feel like when I get to episode 100, I want to tighten the focus a little bit, but I want to make sure that focus represents what you, the listener, would like to get out of this podcast. So this is not something I would share on the podcast, so you do not need to tell me with your voice, as I often like to say, if you have a response that you would like to be put on the podcast, you can certainly do that at speakpipe.com/musician toolkit. But regarding the topics for this and the next several episodes, is this more of what you want or less of what you want? You can direct message me on Instagram at David Lane Music or on Facebook at David M. Lane Music, or just go to davidlanemusic.com and there's a contact form. I always love hearing from all of you no matter what the topic is, but this would be especially helpful to me going forward. Usual disclosure for those who are listening to this episode on YouTube, this episode has a lot of musical examples, and YouTube might not let you hear them, so if you hear a lot of silence in places, that's what you're missing. You can go to the podcast feed to hear the episode as intended. Not quite a full year ago, I presented an episode called 25 Essential Classical Pieces That You Should Know. That was episode 17, and it came out on April 17th of 2023. And full disclosure, I did not re-listen to that episode before posting this one. So I may be repeating myself, but I guess that's okay because I'm assuming that a lot of you have come on board this podcast since I released that episode. So you may want to go back and check out what I said there at any rate. But to summarize what I said back then, or at least what I meant to say, is that there's this faulty assumption that just because someone is a professional musician or even an aspiring professional musician, that they have this comprehensive knowledge of classical music. When sometimes not only is that not true, there are a lot of musicians who do really well without more than even a very basic knowledge of classical music. And I've always been interested with my younger students finding out what are the pieces that they've heard already before they come to my lesson and what are the pieces that they don't know at all. Like, for example, most of them don't recognize the name Tchaikovsky, but when I play an excerpt of Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, they recognize that right away. So on the first episode of this series, that I did almost a year ago. My goal was not to present 25 of the best classical pieces, although in a few cases I think they certainly do count in that category. But it's 25 essential pieces. If you want to have the most basic background or experience in listening to classical music, you should at the very least know these 25 pieces. And again, I'm not going to repeat any of them other than the Tchaikovsky example, which I just mentioned. Another thing, since it's been a while, I also did an episode, it was called episode 13, and it's from March 20th, 2023, but it's called Listening Approach for Classical versus Non-Classical Music. And that's maybe a good episode to cover if you haven't before, about strategies for listening. And one of the things that I will say, again, as a reminder, because I've mentioned this before, I've learned from many people, especially those who claim to really love classical music, but also in other genres, that you cannot listen to a piece one time and say that you've really listened to it or that you have any familiarity with it. So I would say at a minimum, you need to listen to everything on this list twice, but three or four times is even better. And what I would recommend is three or four times all with different performers. So like if it's an orchestral piece, different orchestra, different conductor for each one. For one thing, this is going to lead you to discover who your favorites are. And you'll also realize that not every conductor and every orchestra is good for the same piece. I mean, for example, I love Chicago Symphony with some things such as like Gustav Mahler and Richard Strauss, but I'm not really a big fan of going to their recordings for classical repertoire. And by the way, another episode you may want to check out, it was just recently posted, all about the basics of music history. So when we're talking about, if you hear me mention Baroque, classical, romantic, if any of those terms are new, go check that out for an overview of what's going on. All right, this episode tends to be long because I try to use some excerpts. So we'll go ahead and dive in. Again, as a disclaimer, these are not what I would call the 25 best pieces of classical music, or 25 more of the best classical pieces of music. Some of them are, but these are the essential classical pieces. These are the ones that I think, even if you don't do a lot of deep diving into listening to classical music, you should have some familiarity with these pieces. So just as I presented this originally, this is in alphabetical order by composer. So on my notes, I numbered these 26 through 50. So number 26 is the Concerto for Two Violins by Johann Sebastian Bach. What we consider to be the masterworks of Bach require a more mature listening approach. So I've been careful to recommend some famous works that are more accessible even to younger listeners. This is known as the Bach Double. It's easy to listen to and enjoy. It's a masterful use of two solo violins accompanied by a string orchestra. Number 27, Music for String Instruments, Percussion, and Celesta by Béla Bartók. And this is one of my favorites. This is a four-movement piece that's organized slow, fast, slow, fast. And the two slow movements are wonderfully creepy. The first movement is a great example of a 20th century fugue. But it's the third movement that makes good Halloween music, and enough so that Stanley Kubrick used excerpts of it in his 1980 film, The Shining. And of course, you'll also want to check out the faster, more percussive movements, really make use of the piano as a percussive instrument. Number 28 is the Piano Sonata, Opus 27, Number 2, known as the Moonlight Sonata, by Ludwig von Beethoven. I didn't include many piano pieces on the original 25, but more than any other solo instrument, piano music has a place in repertoire that should transcend the listening experience, no matter what instrument you play. And there are a number of sonatas that should be recognizable when you hear them coming from Beethoven. But the Moonlight Sonata probably stands out. It's a three-movement piece, and the middle movement probably gets a little lost. I don't know how many people who haven't really listened to Beethoven or played this piece would recognize the second movement when they hear it. And that's because it's sandwiched in between two very famous movements. The most famous of all is that very first movement, which, Beethoven being Beethoven, doesn't really even resemble a sonata allegro form, and not the least is which the tempo. It's a slow movement. It's the type of movement you would expect to find as the second movement, but he puts it first. And it's a wonderfully dark piece. It also doesn't take a lot of advanced piano study to be able to learn this particular movement. Now, contrast that with the third movement, which is blazing fast. It starts off almost like Beethoven was trying to present the first movement in triple or quadruple time. It's a really fun piece to play, and almost unexpected after the slow first and the medium tempo second movement. Piece number 29, Carmen Suite Number 1 by Georges Bizet. The entire opera of Carmen is a treasure chest of famous melodies. There are so many places where you could go to, and so that is definitely an opera you should check out in its entirety if you want to check out a really well-done opera, and also an example of critics not recognizing art at the time because it was panned to the point to where Georges Bizet pretty much gave up on trying to be a successful composer and never really experienced the success that he earned, that he was owed in his lifetime. So you can sample that through either of the two suites that he did just for orchestra, but number one gives you some of the more essential pieces, such as the Toreador song. And this lovely intermezzo that features solo flute. The 30th piece on this list is The Young Person's Guide to Orchestra by Benjamin Britten. I've actually argued with one of my classical colleagues about whether or not this is actually a really good piece. He says no, I say yes. And the argument is that it's not very sophisticated by Benjamin Britten's standards, but it is an outstanding piece. There is a version with the narrator and one without. Now, I personally prefer the one without, but I would recommend that younger listeners try the one with narration, because it is a great way to be introduced to the instruments and families of the orchestras. So the piece is constructed with Britten's arrangement of a tune by Henry Purcell, which is basically more than 200 years older than Benjamin Britten was when he wrote this piece. And he does a variety of variations throughout to show off the families of the orchestra. For piece number 31, I could not make up my mind on a single piece, so I chose a collection. It's the 12 Etudes from Opus 10 by Frédéric Chopin. Now, it's 12 pieces, but it'll take you probably no more than 30 minutes to listen to the whole thing because they're very short, but they're very impressively difficult, and many of them are very fast. So etude, if you don't know already, it is basically French for study, and so etudes are study pieces. But before Chopin did his etudes, there really weren't anything that were called etudes that you would play in public as a concert piece, because they were exercises and nothing more. And Chopin managed to create artistically satisfying pieces that happen to serve as etudes. There's an Opus 10 set, there's an Opus 25 set. Opus 10 features passages like this very fast-moving and wide-stretching C major arpeggio in the right hand. You've got the gorgeous third etude of this set that's in E major, and it starts off like one of his nocturnes. Before it gets quite a bit faster and actually becomes an etude. The fifth etude of this set is known as the Black Key Etude. Not because it's all black keys, but because it's in the key of G flat major and it uses all five black keys in addition to C flat. And all of the etudes are fascinating, but finally, you have the C minor etude, which appears as the 12th and final etude. It's known as the Revolutionary Etude. And this was the first one that I learned from this collection. And I learned it just as a left-hand exercise and figured after all that work, I might as well add the right hand. And so this is a fun piece to play. It is a fun piece to listen to. Piece number 32 is The Sorcerer's Apprentice by Paul Dukas. It really surprises me how many students I have of all ages have never seen Disney's Fantasia from 1940. Now, with a 2024 social political eye, you can go back to all of these Disney films and look at them a little bit problematically, including portions of Fantasia. So I won't comment on that, but the animation is really wonderful. And this was Walt Disney's attempt to introduce classical music to his audience. So I really recommend that you go check that out. And even if you haven't checked that out, you have probably seen a picture of Mickey Mouse wearing a wizard's hat with enchanted brooms around him. And that is a clip from The Sorcerer's Apprentice as animated in Fantasia. This is actually an underrated piece of music. It has the famous bassoon theme. It has many variations throughout, including some wild, fast passages with the full orchestra. Piece number 33 is Pomp and Circumstance number 1 by Edward Elgar. So this piece is only 5 minutes. It's actually part of five different Pomp and Circumstances, but this number 1 has a famous section in the middle that you have no doubt heard if you've ever been to a graduation. The fun part, though, is the part that you might not have heard, which is at the beginning. Just as a note here, it won't make my top 50 list of must-hear pieces, but if you like Elgar at all after hearing Pomp and Circumstance number 1, I would highly recommend that you check out the superb and far superior Enigma Variations, a longer but I think much better work. I think it is the must-listen to of Elgar, but I don't think it is culturally as important to know as the Pomp and Circumstance number 1. Piece number 34 is String Quartet Opus 76 number 3, also known as the Emperor Quartet by Franz Joseph Haydn. Haydn essentially invented the string quartet, an ensemble that you're likely to see all over the place and it's very popular at weddings. The slow movement of this one is known as the Emperor's Hymn, and it eventually became the national anthem of Germany. Piece number 35 is Symphony number 4, known as the Italian Symphony of Felix Mendelssohn. The very famous opening of this piece is some of the happiest music you'll ever hear, and also music that drives clarinetists crazy because it is a technique of tonguing that is very difficult. Piece number 36 is Eine kleine Nachtmusik, a serenade for string orchestra by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. No doubt you'll recognize the first movement when you hear it. But there are three other movements, and all of them are ones that I think get played a lot and should be easily recognizable. Piece number 37 is Carmina Burana by Karl Orff. This is classical music's version of a one-hit wonder. Karl Orff is actually more known as a teacher than he was a composer. He was also a bit of a historian. He found all of these medieval tunes that he arranged for a large chorus and orchestra and soloists and created something magnificent. The opening of this huge piece is a staple piece for movie trailers everywhere and a template for how to write epic music, whether it be for video games or whether it be for movies. Just listen to this on big speakers and feel the power. Piece number 38 is one that I just cannot believe got left off of the original list because I think it's probably one of the two or three most famous, most recognizable pieces of all time. If you don't know this one already, I would be stunned. And that is the Canon D by Johann Pachelbel. You can find this for every imaginable instrumental or an even vocal combination out there. This piece has been arranged so many ways, but if you want to hear the original, you want to find a version for three violins and basso continuo. Check out the episode about music history basics if you need an overview of basso continuo. And you can hear that in its original form. Interesting note, conversation that I have had with musician friends before. Every now and then the subject comes up, why is Pachelbel's canon called a canon when it's not a canon? A canon occurs when there is exact imitation going on melodically, when one instrument is doing the exact same thing as another instrument. And when you hear a lot of arrangements of Pachelbel's canon, you don't hear that. But the original score is just a single violin part with a basso continuo line. And that single violin part designates that one violin begins, and when they get to, I believe it's measure 3, the second violin begins at measure 1. And when that first violin gets to measure 5 and that second violin gets to measure 3, the third violin begins at measure 1. So when you hear the original, you actually hear the canon. And by the way, spoiler alert, in just a few episodes, I am going to talk about how to compose a canon. So stay tuned for that. Piece number 39 is Romeo and Juliet Suite number 2 by Sergei Prokofiev. I personally recommend the entire ballet, and Prokofiev is one of my all-time favorite composers. But this Suite number 2 will give you a sample of some famous music other than Peter and the Wolf that has really infiltrated pop culture. In fact, there was a credit card commercial for a few years that used the Dance of the Knights from the suite. Thank you. Piece number 40, The William Tell Overture by Gioachino Rossini. How many of you still watch Looney Tunes or ever watched Looney Tunes? If you haven't, that is a great place to hear classical music, albeit in a different context. And if you've watched your share of those cartoons, and then you listen to the William Tell Overture, you'll say to yourself, not once, not twice, but three separate times, ah, so that's where that came from. There are several generations that still cannot listen to the final galloping theme without thinking of the Lone Ranger. But right before that is a famous morning theme that's presented even in parodies. And that morning theme is following a storm sequence that has been used in countless cartoons and movies. And it is one of the great early representations musically of a storm sequence. By the way, if you like the William Tell Overture, I would definitely check out the Overture to the Barber of Seville, almost as famous and not quite as long. Piece number 41 is Carnival of the Animals by Camille Saint-Saëns. You should read about Camille Saint-Saëns if you want to find a life that is worthy of a movie adaptation. He had a very adventurous life. He was an exile from his country for a while. This is a fun piece, and it's kind of funny how a lot of times composers don't always really like their most famous pieces. Like Tchaikovsky was not very fond of The Nutcracker. Grieg was not very fond of Peer Gynt. And Saint-Saëns was not very fond of Carnival of the Animals. Two of the most famous melodies from this piece come from The Swan, which features a lovely cello melody. And a really fascinating piece is called Aquariums. Try listening to this and imagining John Williams' score from Harry Potter sounding the way it does without this piece existing first. Piece number 42. The Stars and Stripes Forever by John Philip Sousa. The first time I had a 12-year-old student tell me that he had never heard this piece before, having lived in this country his whole life, just really blew me away. And then I found out this is actually pretty common. A lot of people are getting to middle school and high school having not heard this piece. And given that it was designated by, I think, Ronald Reagan as a national march, and I hear it everywhere around 4th of July, I just don't know how you don't know this piece. John Philip Sousa, your classical elitist, struggle with, because all he did was write and master a form of music that was popular. He's more of a popular composer. He used band and orchestra than he's considered a classical composer, but he's definitely one that you should know. You probably shouldn't even be able to think about the instrument of the piccolo without knowing this section. By the way, a fun fact, John Philip Sousa's band performed so much and toured the country so much that more people saw his band play live than did people who heard the Beatles play live. Sousa is rightfully known as the March King, and you can check out several of his, but definitely you should know the Stars and Stripes Forever. Another composer who doesn't get taken very seriously in the classical community, particularly among more purists and elitists, is the composer of number 43 on the beautiful Blue Danube Waltzes by Johann Strauss Jr. And yes, it is waltzes. The German says Walsen more than one. And you can find a lot of abbreviated versions out there with just a few of the themes, but you should accept nothing shorter than 9 minutes and with the full orchestra. This piece is remarkable for just how many catchy melodies happen one after another. Thank you. Piece number 44 is The Firebird by Igor Stravinsky. This exists as a longer ballet score or a shorter suite, and I'm fine with whatever choice you make, but I love the ballet. If you've ever tried Rite of Spring from the previous list I mentioned and had a hard time with it, please don't resist trying this one. It was written 2 years earlier when Stravinsky was still writing music that was inspired by more traditional influences. It's still very original, but much more accessible. It has the really nice, mysterious opening that features such an original effect for some of the strings to gliss up and down the strings, but while catching the harmonics. And you have some truly lovely, beautiful sections. You have the hugely energetic Danse Infernale. And you have the grand closing to this piece that is worthy of any movie score. Pieces number 45 and 46 are by the same composer, and that is Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Beethoven got two pieces on the original list, and Tchaikovsky might have written more music that has made its way into popular culture than anyone, including probably Beethoven, including Mozart, including Chopin, and that's really saying something. So I could actually choose more than two that you probably would know, even by accident. One of them is the Overture to Romeo and Juliet. It is a single movement piece that has a great bouncy kind of foreboding theme. But then it has a love theme in the second half that is just soaring. And obviously was an inspiration to film composers like Max Steiner. And the second piece by Tchaikovsky on this list, number 46 total, is the Overture to 1812. This is a musical recognition of a famous war that happened between the French and Russians when Napoleon's forces invaded Russia in 1812 and very nearly occupied the land. And what Tchaikovsky does is really brilliant, and that is to pit French and Russian melodies going against each other at the same time. And oh yeah, he has real cannons fire in the orchestration. One of the ironies of life is that this Russian piece is very often performed around American 4th of July concerts. Number 47 is Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis by Ralph Vaughan Williams. I may be going a little outside the box here. This may not be one that you would know by accident, but Vaughan Williams is a composer that you need to seek out, and this is a great introduction to his music. He uses a beautiful piece from the Renaissance by Thomas Tallis. And does his own take for a rather unusual combination of double string orchestra and string quartet. That is to say, two string orchestras that are in stereo, formed on the left side of the stage and on the right side of the stage. And then in the middle and the front somewhere is a string quartet all by itself. It is a piece that I would love to hear performed live in the way that Vaughan Williams intended. But this is just one of those gorgeous pieces. If you're having a tough day, listen to this piece and just let yourself be relaxed. Number 48. You're going to need a little time to hear this one because I could not separate this into just one of these pieces. But it is the Opus 8, numbers 1 through 4, known as the Four Seasons by Antonio Vivaldi. These are four separate multi-movement concerti for violin and string orchestra. Each piece, each concerto, has three movements. And if you're going to be impatient, at least do this. Listen to the first movements of Spring. Winter. And Autumn. And then listen to the last movement of Summer. It's a nice bonus if you can find the written score, because Vivaldi includes poems or descriptions about the seasons throughout the score. It is actually very much like a movie. It is scored to visuals that Vivaldi has provided. Number 49 and number 50 are by the same composer. This is Richard Wagner. And the first piece is The Rite of the Valkyries. It is a short and stirring introduction to this composer. And then the 50th and final piece of this two-part series, also by Wagner, is the Prelude to Act 3 of Lohengrin. Now, you can find that piece as a standalone instrumental, but I would recommend that you find a recording of the opera Lohengrin and listen to the Prelude to Act 3. Like the standalone versions, you'll hear the fast, catchy melody that happens at the beginning. But as a bonus, you'll hear the vocal music that follows, which is the original version of the bridal chorus, a piece that millions of brides since then have used for their own processional. So if you've heard this and you've heard my previous series of these 50 pieces, what are some of your favorites? I can't say that I have any intention of doing a part 3 to this and 25 more pieces, but if I were, what are some ones that I should include? And again, it's not just pieces that you think this is a great piece, but it's ones that you think it would be surprising if you had even a passive interest in classical music and did not know these pieces. Send that feedback to me through my website, going to the contact form at davidlanemusic.com, or tell me with your own voice and be happy to consider sharing it on a future episode. You can do that at speakpipe.com/musician toolkit. And before I wrap up this episode, I just want to take this moment to pat myself on the back as a podcaster, because this sequel episode, 25 More Essential Classical Pieces, is more than 22 minutes shorter than the part 1 of this series. So I have learned how to keep it moving a little bit in the year that has gone by between these episodes, or almost a year. Okay, I don't often tease the next episode, but if you are a professional musician, you need to check out next week's episode and you need to be timely on it. I mean, it's going to be information you can use at any point, but next week's episode comes out on April 8th, and that happens to be 1 week before taxes are due, and I'm going to be talking to someone who works with musicians, specifically music teachers, on operating like a business and also things to know about taxes. So be sure to check that out next week. If that doesn't apply to you, well, now you know. There's going to be something different and worth checking out when we get to April 15th. So, once again, nudge me toward the episodes that you want more of and the episodes that you would like less of. That's going to wrap it up for now, but I'll be back with you again next week. And until then, thank you so much for listening.